Hi, welcome to this lecture on nature-based interventions, sustainable well-being, and social work. But before we dive into the lecture, let me first introduce myself. Who am I? Yes, that's me on the rock, just by the way. So my name is James Kutu Obeng. And I originally come from Ghana. I am currently a doctoral researcher in the ASTRA project, which is coordinated by the University of Evascular. I am specifically affiliated with the Cochlear University Consortium, CHIDENIUS. And also I am a visiting researcher at the Natural Resources Institute, LUKE, of Finland. For my background, I have a background in social work, my bachelor's degree from the University of Ghana, where I studied social work with sociology. Later, I moved to Europe to do my master's degree under the Erasmus Mundus Joint Master's Degree Program in social work with families and children, which was jointly hosted by the University of Stavanger, the University Institute of Lisbon, the University of Gothenburg, and the Makerere University. Over the years, I have gained research and practice experiences in eco-social work education, especially writing about African social work education. And I am currently researching about nature-based interventions in social work, which I am going to mainly talk about in this lecture. I also have interests in child protection, youth welfare, immigration, and social policy. So, for this lecture, I have divided it into two main parts. First, I'm going to give a general overview and introduction on the interconnections between nature-based interventions, sustainable well-being, and social work. In the second part, I will share some latest empirical results from my own research that sheds light on nature-based interventions, sustainable well-being, and social work. So, let's begin with the global definition of social work. Well-being as a core concern or a core mission of social work. What does the definition say? Social work is a practice-based profession and also an academic discipline that promotes social change and development, social cohesion, and the empowerment and liberation of people. The principles of social justice, human rights, collective responsibility, and respect for diversities are central to social work. Underpinned by theories of social work, social sciences, humanities, and indigenous knowledges, social work engages people and structures to address life challenges and to enhance well-being. Of course, the above definition may be amplified at the national and or regional levels. So, from this definition of social work and also definition of social work in other national and regional contexts, it is quite obvious that the mission of social work, among other things, is to enhance the well-being of people, especially those people who are in vulnerable and marginalized situations. However, this mission of social work to promote well-being appears to be challenged by the ongoing global socio-ecological crisis that seem to deepen the well-being challenges of people, especially the very core service users of social work services. For example, the world is faced with climate change and biodiversity loss, global wars and insecurity, global economic recessions, and the lingering COVID-19 pandemic. These crises are affecting lives and livelihoods. It is important to note that the climate crisis impacts all of us. However, those who are marginalized or oppressed, like young people, like women, indigenous peoples, they experience these crises and its consequences to an even greater extent. It affects their health. It affects their well-being. It creates injustices for these people and also for the planet. Especially for young people, reports and research indicate that they are particularly vulnerable to the effects of climate change. They face issues such as respiratory illness, heat, hunger, displacement, anxiety, trauma, among others. A typical example is a recent report by the Ministry of Education and Culture in Finland. And the report indicated that climate change and biodiversity loss were among the most pressing and important issues that require attention and that require intervention after a consultation with young people. When they ask the young people about their thoughts on climate change, I mean Finnish young people, they indicated that, or most of them indicated that, anxiety was a common problem for them. Also, issues such as labor market crisis renders many young people unemployed. It puts people, especially young ones, into precarious employment with little institutional support. At the same time, there is increasing disconnection of young people from nature, which is marked by reduced nature contact and reduced outdoor activities. All these crises disproportionately imperil the well-being of young people. As we read in the definition of social work is at the forefront of enhancing people's well-being. To be able to champion the well-being issues in the midst of this global socio-ecological crisis, social work must include strategies aimed at promoting factors that contribute to a sustainable world, ameliorating the impacts of climate change on disadvantaged groups such as young people, as I mentioned. And most importantly, social work must incorporate the natural environment into the day-to-day practices of social work to improve the health and well-being of affected people. This can be achieved if social work combines not only social perspectives as it has predominantly done, but also combine ecological perspectives, including ecosystems. And by doing so, we can then approach sustainable human well-being and sustainable community development. What this means is that the ecosocial approach to social work implies that the core mission of social work, which is to enhance well-being, must align with sustainability and nature to be able to achieve sustainable well-being. So next, I'm going to present two useful analytical frameworks to make sense of what sustainable well-being entails. So in the first framework, which has been termed as the having, the doing, loving, and being model, originally developed by sociologist Eric Alert, who used a needs-based approach. But then in the original design, the dimensions were only three, with having, loving, and being. But it has been adapted by Finnish scholars Hilvilaami and Helne, who added the doing dimension. In the original design, doing was conceptualized as part of loving. But in the latest one, as you can see here, doing is set out independently. So from this framework, human well-being is nested within the ecosystems. And what this means is that human well-being is reliant on the resources and the services provided by the ecosystem, and that human activities have an impact on the ecosystems. So it goes beyond what humans receive from the ecosystems to also extend to the impact that humans leave on the ecosystems. So sustainable well-being, again, is more reciprocal, going beyond the human well-being to also taking into account sustainability dimensions. Now, let's take a look at what each dimension represents. First, the having dimension, it refers to the material resources provided by the ecosystems. For example, we can talk of food, we can talk of water, or even energy. It is through these essential resources and services that humans satisfy their needs. Therefore, these resources must be consumed within the limits of the ecosystem. Also, the doing dimension refers to the meaningful and responsible activities that enhance human well-being, but without destroying the opportunities for other humans and non-humans within the ecosystem to flourish and be beneficial to all. We can talk of examples like doing outdoor nature-related activities, conservation activities, and restoration activities in nature. Third, the loving dimension. It refers to the reciprocal caring relationships between humans and other humans, and also between humans and the non-human members of the ecosystem, like plants and animals. And finally, the being dimension. It is the alignment of one's well-being with the bigger whole of other human concerns, the community, the society, the natural environment, and even spirituality. This also refers to self-actualization. Now let's look at the second framework. The second framework was designed by Angela Morigi. And in this framework, Morigi applies Toronto's care ethics to explain how green care enterprises in Finland promoted reciprocal and relational caring relationships between humans and nature. So we have one dimension known as the caring about. This refers to the issue of interest or the issue of concern that attention must be directed or dedicated towards regarding the green care. So it reflects more of attentiveness towards an interest. Second, caring for. Caring for relates to responsibility toward certain issues such as the environment or service users' concern. And this typifies a sense of responsibility. And third, we have caregiving. And caregiving refers to practices that are carried out to provide care. This shows competence. Also, we have care receiving, referring to the care one receives in return for the care that we give. This shows responsiveness. And finally, we have caring with. And caring with shows the reciprocal caring relationships between humans and nature in the entire care process. This also highlights reciprocity. So, looking at these two broad frameworks, we can see and also we can understand the interconnection between human well-being, sustainability, and nature. Next, how can we achieve or promote sustainable well-being in practice and also for social work? This is indeed something my research tries to explore by arguing that nature-based interventions represent ecosocial work practices that can promote sustainable well-being, especially for young people in precarious situations. That is, young people who are outside education or employment and who are facing well-being challenges. One may ask, what is nature-based interventions? So, nature-based interventions have been defined to represent an umbrella term that refer to programs, activities, or even strategies that utilize nature, including the fauna, that is non-human animals, flora, including plants, and landscape-related activities, alongside other complementary approaches. This is a very crucial point. That is, alongside other complementary approaches to promote the health and well-being of people. And there are at least three core elements that underpin nature-based interventions. And they include the natural environment where the interventions happen. The natural environment actually provides the therapeutic context for the overall intervention. Also, there is the nature-related activity, which entail the doing of meaningful activities with and also in nature, and for nature as well as for humans. So this clearly also shows the reciprocal relations. And finally, there is the social context or the community. And this refers to the human relationships, strategies, and techniques that are formed within the intervention process. So, as can be seen here, nature-based interventions combine human well-being and nature toward achieving sustainable well-being. Interestingly, nature-based interventions have been used as social work strategies. In fact, nature-based interventions have come up as approaches within classical person-in-environment perspective in social work, as well as emerging eco-social work approaches. For example, social work studies have reported on wilderness therapy or forest-based therapies in North America, specifically the USA. Also, other social work studies have reported on adventure-based group therapies, which happened in natural settings. And studies have talked about animal-assisted interventions and social and care farming within the European context. In all these studies, the well-being outcomes of service users were largely positive, showing that nature-based interventions can be effective approaches for social work service users who are mostly in vulnerable situations. Based on this background and my own research, I attempt to deepen the knowledge base in nature-based interventions and also support their incorporation within social work practice. So now let's look at some aspects of my own research as well as the findings emerging from my research, which is going to be the part two of this lecture. So I'll be presenting first a systematic literature review, which I conducted, and also I'm going to show two empirical study results that I have done in Finland. Now, let's start with the systematic literature review. So, based on 49 peer-reviewed articles, this literature review assessed the well-being impacts of nature-based interventions on young people who were facing precarious situations, such as being at risk of becoming unemployed or being at risk of dropping out of school. And young people who were actually already unemployed and already outside of education. In general, the literature review found that nature-based interventions promoted sustainable well-being for young people by producing mostly positive and lasting well-being outcomes. Also, nature-based interventions ensured that the well-being of young people was interconnected with environment, social, and economic sustainability. And finally, the interventions fostered the interconnections between young people and their natural environment. As we can see in this slide, wilderness or forest therapy was the most common nature-based interventions, according to the literature review. And most of the studies were also conducted in the United States of America. Also, we can see from this slide that there is a seeming underrepresentation of studies reporting on nature-based interventions from the global south and indigenous regions. For example, looking at the few studies emerging from regions like Africa and Asia, this actually represents a limitation of the literature review that I conducted. It is, however, important to highlight that the ecosocial approach to social work encourages global south and indigenous perspectives and indigenous wisdom. This is because these perspectives are especially rich when it comes to human nature relationships. One important thing to take note here is that instead of nature-based interventions, indigenous peoples pursue well-being through what they term as land-based approaches. This can be used, of course, interchangeably with nature-based interventions. Also, land-based approaches can actually inspire nature-based interventions, which has been the case in Europe and also other Western parts of the world. Land is an essential element in the conceptualization of well-being, according to indigenous people. Same way, spirituality is a key component to indigenous well-being, and relatedness is also another dimension that promotes sustainable well-being when looking at indigenous approaches. Now, let's take a look at some interesting findings from indigenous land-based approaches. According to a study conducted in Canada, it was found that land-based approaches promoted sustainable well-being by helping or enabling the harvesting of overabundant and invasive species like goose and beaver among some indigenous youth in Canada. These activities or approaches, according to the studies, did not only benefit the young people's material well-being, such as providing them with food, but also the activities or approaches helped the young people to preserve their environment because these were invasive species. At the same time, it enabled the young people to connect with their community traditions and also to connect with their community elders. As an important thing to take note, the way indigenous people's well-being is assessed must be done consciously and being aware of context. This is something that I have come to learn from my research and also from the literature review that I conducted. In one of the studies I reviewed, it was pointed out that researchers must use culturally relevant tools to assess the well-being of indigenous people and not just any tool, as there are so many tools that we can use to assess well-being. So it is important to be culturally conscious when you are trying to apply any tool to assess the well-being of indigenous people. Now, let's take a look at some evidence from the field. In the first field work, I participated in nature-based interventions in Finland, which were geared toward the activation and rehabilitation program of young people outside education or employment in an operating model which is called Nature-Based Youth Workshop. And the goal of the Nature-Based Youth Workshop was to promote the well-being of the participants physically, mentally, and socially, and also to increase cooperation and interaction with other humans and also with nature. After several weeks of joining these highly motivated young people in outdoor activities, such as hiking in the forest during winter and snow, which was really cold at the time, activities also such as bird watching during springtime and fat biking during summer and many other activities, I participated as an interested party, also taking care of my well-being. And at the same time, I participated as a researcher trying to gather data from the field. In the end, I also conducted interviews with these young people. And the interviews revealed really, really interesting findings, as we can see from the screen. So, based on the interview findings, I used the having, the doing, loving, and being model to interpret the well-being experiences of young people in order to explain sustainable well-being. For the having dimension, the results from the interviews highlighted that the natural environment provided the landscape, the fauna and flora, including also the affordance and the overall setting for the enablement of the interventions, as well as all the well-being outcomes that emerged from the workshop. Second, the doing dimension revealed that young people were able to engage in meaningful occupation through their participation in the workshop. Now, let's take note that these young people were neither occupied in education or employment during the time of the research. Some of the things that were found to be meaningful to these young people included caring for plants and animals, engaging in nature conservation activities, and also the young people reported that they had the opportunity to develop and use their skills. And for the loving dimension, the results indicated a sense of belonging and also community among the young people. This was particularly important for them because majority of them were socially withdrawn and they did not have a social group to belong to. So, through the workshop, they made friends, they connected with other youngsters and staff who helped them feel part of a new social group. In addition, the young people felt more connected to nature, and this actually influenced them to live a more sustainable lifestyle. For the final dimension, which is the being dimension, overall, the workshop helped the young people to improve their health and their well-being. It helped them to experience social participation and inclusion in their own ways. And also, it helped them feel important to society. As the results show here, the well-being of young people was enhanced, and also their relatedness with other humans and also non-humans was also enhanced, thereby supporting sustainable well-being. Now, we move to the second field case. In this case, I conducted what we call a public participation geographic information system survey, trying to understand the nature experiences of young people in Finland. The goal of this survey was to generate research-based knowledge on the specific natural environments and activities of young people that can be used in the planning and implementation of nature-based interventions. As a background, I note that what constitutes natural environment can indeed vary. For example, it can be a forest, a natural environment can be a rock area, or even a water area. Also, I note that not all natural environments or nature-related activities are favored by young people. Indeed, some studies in Finland have reported that young people prefer sports and leisure areas in particular. And also, I take note that some environments and activities may rather worsen young people's health and well-being instead of promoting it. And this was one of the findings from the literature review that I conducted. Other studies have similarly reported same outcomes, that in as much that natural environments promote positive well-being outcomes, in some cases, they can also promote or they can impair the well-being of people. With these as background issues, it is then important to investigate more specifically which natural areas are preferred by young people, what activities are done in these areas, and how do these factors relate with young people's well-being, nature relatedness, and social inclusion. In the survey, there were 561 markings in the map which were done by young people, identifying which natural environments they frequently visited, what activities they did in these environments. Now, these are two maps that I have developed from the survey. The first one is highlighting the activity markings, that is the places where the young people marked in the maps. And the second map is also showing the hotspots, that is the most frequently visited areas in the environment. In this study, we found that young people preferred or they favored, again, sports and leisure areas. This has also been previously reported by other studies. And again, young people frequently visited forest environments and also water areas. This is quite unexpected results because the study was conducted in an area where there is lots of water as well as forest. Especially, I found from this study that the more young people visited water-related environments such as beach areas, the higher their mental well-being. However, young people outside education or employment visited beach areas lesser than those who were in education or employment. What this means is that young people outside education or employment may miss out on the positive mental well-being benefits that are associated with water-related environments. So with this finding, there is the need for understanding on why young people who are outside of education or employment are not visiting beach areas more often compared to those who are in education or employment. Regarding the activities that young people do in their favorite environment, this study found that young people predominantly engaged in jogging-related activities. And again, I found out from the analysis that the more young people did activities related to nature exploration and fitness, activities such as jogging, the more young people were related with their natural environment. Or the more young people did activities such as nature exploration and fitness, the more young people were connected to nature. Also, The more young people engaged in activities such as gathering food or activities such as fishing, the more young people were connected to nature. So, overall, we can say that there are positive associations between the natural environment and young people's mental well-being, as well as young people's connectedness with nature. And interestingly, the specific environments identified in this study can be used to develop nature-based interventions for young people, especially for those young people who are in marginalized situations, like being outside education or employment. Now, let me conclude this lecture with a recap and also a question. So, from all what I have discussed in this lecture, first, I have mentioned that the ongoing global socio-ecological crisis disproportionately affects social work service users, such as young people. And it is important that social work combines social and ecological perspectives into practice to be able to address these wicked problems caused by the global socio-ecological crisis. And here is my proposition. By leveraging nature-based interventions, social work can realize its core mission of promoting sustainable well-being and sustainable community development. And the results are clear from Finland to show that nature-based interventions foster inclusive, empowering, and therapeutic spaces for social work practice. Finally, I pose this question for us to ponder on in our studies and also in our research. What new challenges and opportunities do you think nature-based interventions would bring to social work? On this note, I wish to thank you for your attention in this lecture, and I wish you the very best in your studies. Feel free to send me your questions if you have any. For further discussions, feel free to contact. Thank you. Medase. Kitos. Bye.